This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we'll hear from an author who wants to see some systemic change in how we talk about and deal with folks struggling with substance use disorder.
People that we treat the poorest in this country, standing up and speaking, we need more of that.
This is West Virginia Morning. In the run-up to the 2016 election, Jack Shuler was reporting on poverty in his home state of Ohio. He says he was disappointed that neither presidential candidate at the time had much to say about the generational poverty and homelessness being experienced by millions in the U.S. His reporting made him increasingly aware of the relationship between the economic crisis that so many people in the Rust Belt and Appalachia have been experiencing for decades and the surge of drug use. He decided reporting stories from his home in Licking County, Ohio, wasn't enough. In This Is Ohio, Shuler's book, released this month, he explores our nation's overdose crisis as a human rights issue, a crisis in which, quote, every overdose is a policy failure, close quote. He takes us out into his community and beyond to witness the devastation of the overdose epidemic and, most importantly, the efforts to overcome it. He spoke with 100 Days in Appalachia's Taylor Sisk.
So you use person first language in the book. Describe what that means and why you felt it's important to use in this book.
Person first language means whenever you're talking about someone, you don't describe them as a pathology. Instead, you describe them as a human being first. I learned a lot, actually. I learned a lot from a number of journalists who are trying to use person-first language in their reporting. And I could see the flaws in some of my past stories, how, you know, when you talk about someone as an addict, you're leaving it at that, but people are more than just that, right? And it was eye-opening to me to begin to think about the things that we could do differently in journalism, that might work to mitigate the harms of our past work, right? And potentially work to combat stigma.
So you would say, and rather than saying someone is an addict, you'd say they're living with an addiction, for example, is that?
A person who uses drugs or a person who uses IV drugs or a person with substance use disorder, yep.
Tell us about the corner, which is the focal point of your book and why you chose to use it as the scene setter in your prologue.
There were two women who met at the Women's March in Newark, Ohio, and they were frustrated with what they had noticed was a growing homelessness issue in the county. And they decided, Patricia Perry and Jim Kanegi, they decided that they were going to just start handing out coats. And so they did that. And then they set up in a parking lot and they started grilling hot dogs and handing out food. And then it also became over time a place where there was a little bit of political organizing going on. I mean, they were trying to engage with people who use those services, right, to get in the fight around, you know, how people who are unhoused are treated in that community. How people who use drugs are treated in that community. One of the things that Trish started doing was distributing harm reduction supplies and naloxone and doing naloxone training. And the health department has come down there to do Hep A and Hep C. There are a couple of folks who come down there and cut hair once a month. You know, the more I was there, the more I gained the trust of the people who were running the show, and it helped me meet folks.
You traveled to Vancouver. Tell us about what you experienced there in terms of how they're addressing their addiction crisis differently than how we are here.
In the downtown east side, what I saw was people who use drugs at the forefront of advocating for and creating spaces for people who use drugs that are safe, that help save lives. They created the first safe injection site in the United States, InSight, which, you know, is an amazing place, And then right now, there's a special dispensation from the government to allow them to have what are called overdose prevention sites. One person I talked to called them lifeguard stations. And essentially, they're like pop-up safe injection sites with oxygen and Narcan at the ready, and people can go in there and use and not die. And if they do overdose, they can quickly be saved. There are trained professionals there, volunteers. It was incredible. It was incredible. But the thing that I took away from that experience was the anger and the desire to actually create something like social justice for people who use drugs, and not quitting and like always fighting and pushing for more. And I was so impressed by that. I see that at times in the United States, but I feel like I don't see it enough.
Are we moving in the right direction in addressing this crisis? And do you have a vision of what success looks like?
You know, until we recognize that, first of all, the racist origins of the drug war, right? Until we recognize that and just the ways in which the drug war has destroyed the communities of people of color and poor people around this country, until we actually, you know, not only recognize that, but like actually deal with the consequences of that, it's going to be hard to move past. I mean, you know, here we are in 2020, and we are talking a lot about these, you know, we're still talking about the lawsuits with Big Pharma, but people are not overdosing because of pills anymore. I mean, that's 10 years old. That's old news. People are overdosing because of fentanyl. And so the thing that would resolve that would be to actually have a safe supply. And we need to think a little bit more radically. I mean, in Canada, the conversation when I was there was not about like safe injection sites. The conversation there was over safe supply. They were like, let's get a legit supply of heroin so that people can take heroin and not fentanyl, because they're dying because of fentanyl. And that, to me, I was like, whoa, that conversation is like miles away from where we are. But if you look at the data, it's true. If you look at the drug supply in Ohio, people are dying because of fentanyl, and they're dying because of carfentanil. And until we address that, then people are going to just keep dying.
What do you most want people to take away from your book?
It's a story about reimagining how we exist in a democratic country, right? It's about inserting ourselves in the democracy in ways that sometimes we forget we can, and about speaking up for ourselves in the public sphere. People who are the most marginalized and the people that we treat the poorest in this country, standing up and speaking, we need more of that. We need more of that.
That was author and documentarian Jack Shuler speaking with 100 Days in Appalachia's Taylor Sisk. Shuler's book, This is Ohio, went on sale September 8th. Mm-hmm. 2020 looked to be a turning point for getting rid of single-use plastics. 8 states and hundreds of local governments had approved bans, but when the pandemic hit, many places went back to disposable plastics, like grocery store bags. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant looks at the scientific debate to find out whether it's safe to return to reusables.
It's not easy to create a new habit, like bringing your own bags to buy groceries, even for someone like Dan Donovan. He's spokesman for Pittsburgh-based Giant Eagle and has been working to reduce single-use plastic bags at the regional supermarket chain.
I can't tell you the number of times that I've walked into a Giant Eagle and thought, shucks, I forgot my bags back in my car.
In January, Giant Eagle made an effort to help people remember. It offered incentives to customers with reusable bags, with a goal to eliminate single-use plastic bags in all its stores by 2025. The Waterworks Giant Eagle in Pittsburgh and multiple locations in Ohio started a pilot program in January that removed plastic bags from checkouts.
We actually helped eliminate 20 million single-use plastic bags from entering our landfills or otherwise cluttering our community. So we're very excited about that.
But in February and March, as COVID-19 hit the region, things changed.
And all of us were just uncertain. I mean, we're just concerned and we were scared, to be quite frank. We brought the plastic bags back in and we asked customers not to bring in their own reusable bags.
Other supermarket chains did the same. States, including California, New York, and New Hampshire, backed off bans on certain single-use plastics, as did many cities like Philadelphia and Chicago. Reusables were being associated with the possible spread of the virus, while single-use plastics seemed cleaner and less likely to carry disease. Researcher Robert Hale says this general idea by many people was not an accident.
There was a fairly organized campaign among plastic manufacturers and related industries to basically infer that reusable plastics did indeed present some sort of COVID-related health risk.
Hale is a professor in environmental chemistry at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. He points to a well-publicized letter by the Plastics Industry Association, which asked the Centers for Disease Control to speak out against bans on single-use plastic bags as a public safety risk. The letter said reusable bags can carry viruses and bacteria that can spread throughout a store in, quote, study after study after study.
When you say study after study after study, you start thinking, well, there's, you know, a basket full of them. Well, yeah, there were three.
In a scientific opinion piece he wrote in the journal Environmental Health and Technology, Hale found that none of the studies were specifically relevant to the transmission of coronavirus. In one, researchers from Oregon studied the spread of a norovirus from a reusable bag that had been in the bathroom while a person was sick. The food in that bag was later eaten. Hale says here, the food was studied as a transmission route, but not the bag itself. The other two studies looked at cross-contamination from bacteria, also not coronavirus, from reusable plastic bags after repeated use.
I think these studies that are cited point out that there is a potential issue from reusable bags, but it's probably not so much from COVID, but the fact that you need to wash these things every once in a while and don't put your gym socks in with your groceries.
The CDC does not have specific guidance on grocery store bags. The Plastics Industry Association declined to comment for this story. Ryan Sinclair is Associate Professor of Environmental Microbiology at Loma Linda University in California. He wrote a piece in USA Today in March calling on stores to stop allowing reusable bags because his research and others show reusable bags often carry bacteria and sometimes even fecal matter, while single-use bags do not.
Those things are new and they didn't transit to somebody's home and they didn't go in the trunk of your car and they didn't go on your kitchen counter and in their grocery cart. They're new and they're much less likely to have the contamination.
But there's no specific research yet on whether coronavirus can live on reusable bags or new plastic bags.
The coronavirus could be on anything from a shoe or a lizard or a reusable grocery bag.
Seems to be a very unlikely route of transmission.
Dr. Jody Sherman is Associate Professor of Epidemiology at Yale School of Public Health. She's one of more than 115 public health experts, including virologists and food packaging safety specialists, who signed a statement on this issue. It was released by Greenpeace USA and ensures retailers and consumers that single-use plastics are not safer than reusables to prevent coronavirus.
Really what we have are case reports and case studies. I know of none that have tied anywhere in the world an outbreak or transmission of SARS-CoV-2 through reusable bags.
As more has become known about how coronavirus spreads, mostly through the air, even Ryan Sinclair is updating his recommendations. He now says reusable bags should be safe to use as long as people wash them regularly. California has reinstated its bag ban, and New York plans to enforce its ban later this month. In Pennsylvania, Wendell Young leads the local union that represents more than 20,000 supermarket workers, including cashiers and baggers at Giant Eagle. Young says the initial fear of reusable bags has been tempered with more information.
I'm okay with customers using reusable bags. We are, as a union, okay with that. We just don't want our members handling them. We're not going to do it because we don't know how they were cared for. We don't know what those bags might be carrying with them.
Some grocery chains have already started allowing customers to bring in reusable bags again. Giant Eagle says it will officially welcome them this month. Customers with reusable bags will be asked to use self-checkout and bag their own groceries. And please, many stores, workers, and public health experts repeat, wash your bags. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glynis Ford. This is West Virginia Morning.